23 years ago now, goodness, of a lifelong fascination. I started to read deeply into the Islamic traditions that explain the Quran and are second only in authority to the Quran for Muslims. And really, there's some amazing material in those, which I put into the book, that does a great deal to illuminate what exactly we're up against in this war on terror.
Well, now, is the Hadith, is that what they call the
Hadith.
Other books? And
that's it. That's right. Those are the traditions of what Muhammad said and did. Because, Dr. Stan, the Quran is every word of it is supposed to have been spoken by Allah, by God himself. And he's talking to Muhammad most of the time, and they talk about things that happened to Muhammad. But, of course, we don't know what happened to Muhammad. We weren't there, and they don't explain.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Robert Spencer. We'll be talking about his book, Onward, Muslim Soldiers. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And with us this afternoon is Mr. Robert Spencer. We're going to be talking about his book, Onward, Muslim Soldiers. And Mr. Spencer came from a family that was expelled from the Ottoman Empire many years ago. And so he's always been rather fascinated by what the Muslim faith really was. And when he went to college, he ran into Muslims who told him, read the Quran. So he did read the Quran. And what did you really find as you went into this? You mentioned that it left you with a lot of questions, but questions about what?
Well, the Quran is unique among the scriptures that major world religions believe in the sense that it has so many things in it that exhort the Muslims to make war against unbelievers. It's really unbelievable. When you start to read the book, and I encourage readers to do so, I mean listeners to do so, every Christian needs to be informed about what we're up against and what the challenge is that Islam is posing to the Western world. If you read the book, you find that there's no other scripture like it. That and you know, I'm using the word scripture in the sense of things that people consider to be the word of God. It's unique in actually having a command from Allah, from God. Allah is really just the Arabic word for God. Christian Arabs use it as well, but He commands them to make war against unbelievers. You find that there are passages in the Old Testament where these kinds of commands are given in a local and specific circumstance, and no Jews and Christians nowadays think this is what we have to do today, and these are our general marching orders from God, and this is how we please God. But you do find in Islam that the radical Muslims around the world take very seriously the general and open-ended commands to make war on unbelievers that are found in many places in the Quran, and that is what they are using to justify their actions today.
But don't we have a lot of peaceful Muslims who don't want to be involved in this sort of thing?
Yeah, we certainly do, and unfortunately, however, the peaceful Muslims don't have as strong a theoretical basis within Islam for their position. Really, what they do basically is just ignore the passages that I'm referring to, or they try to interpret them in a spiritual sense. And there's a legitimacy to that within Islamic tradition, that you do find people understanding jihad as a spiritual struggle. But there's also, right from the beginning of Islam, a broad tradition, theology, and law that is very clearly and carefully delineated.
Hold that thought for just a moment.
Okay.
We'll be right back here, Edward. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest is Robert Spencer. We're talking about his book, Onward, Muslim Soldiers. And we were asking the question, aren't there peaceful Muslims? And there are, but if they have to sort of stretch the scriptures, because if you read the original scriptures, they do promote violence and war and aggression. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, absolutely, Dr. Stan. The problem is that the radicals are able to point to the Quran and to the traditions of the Prophet, the Hadith that you mentioned earlier, and they're able to say, look, we're being loyal to what God expects of us. And the moderates, who are not doing these things or are not waging jihad with force of arms are not being loyal to the commands of God, and they're able to recruit on that basis. And this is something that people don't like to face because it's not politically correct, but it is the fact of the matter that we're dealing with people who have a religious motivation for what they're doing. They're not doing it because they're poor and desperate. Osama bin Laden is a very rich man, just to take the most notorious example. But they're doing it because they think this is what they do to please God, that they have a responsibility to make war against the non-Muslim world until the non-Muslims either convert to Islam or submit as inferiors under Islamic rule.
And the amazing thing is that this is a religion where the people have no fear of death, because if you die fighting the infidels, that's you and me, or the innocent people of Israel, you're immediately going to be transported to paradise with how many virgins do you get and all this wonderful life. And they honestly believe that. So
yes,
these people have no fear of death. You fight an Islamic soldier, and why, he's not afraid to die.
Yes. Because the only guarantee of paradise in the Quran is for people who are killed while fighting a war for Allah. And so you have this motivation becomes very real for these people, and they consider that this is how they're going to get to heaven. And there's no other statement in the Quran that says you will get to paradise if you do this or that. The only one that is there is that if you are fighting and are killed while you are fighting for Allah.
Well, now, is this movement spreading throughout the world? The radical form of Islam really didn't exist. Well, of course, there were Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia, but outside of that, there was the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt in 1928, and yet the radical form of the Muslim faith was not a major factor anywhere in the world until maybe the last 20 years or so?
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Dr. Stan. But if you trace back the roots of what we're seeing today, they go back far longer. The radical Muslim movement in the modern age got a tremendous boost when Khomeini was able to take power in Iran. And that was really a widespread popular movement in Iran at the time. 1979, Khomeini took power and an Islamic State was established in Iran. You can see from that, radical Muslims around the world were emboldened, were given confidence, and also were given a secure financial basis. And Iran has financed global jihadist movements since then. But the fact is that Iran didn't start it, and Khomeini didn't start it. That the theoretical basis for radical Islam was formulated in the 1920s, as I explain in the book, by some prominent Muslim theorists who taught that no government has any legitimacy unless it obeys Islamic law, and that the Muslims' responsibility was to fight against governments that did not obey Islamic law until they were forced to adopt it. And this started in Egypt, as you pointed out, and spread throughout the world, such that the radical Muslim movements of today can pretty much all trace their lineage back to the Muslim Brotherhood that was founded in Egypt in the 1920s. But even the Brotherhood itself was not some kind of an innovative movement. It was only building on traditional Islamic doctrines and traditions that had always been part of Islam. The Muslim armies waged war against the Christian world right from the beginning in the 7th century. They conquered areas of North Africa, of Egypt, of the Middle East that had been Christian since the time of our Lord, and they continued to press into Christian Europe from that day until September 11, 1683, when they were turned back from a siege at the gates of Vienna in Austria. And then it was not a matter of after that they renounced jihad, but they simply weren't strong enough to carry it out. And the Islamic world went into eclipse, although no Islamic sect ever renounced violent jihad or rejected it as an element of Islam. And so it was simply a matter of they were not waging it, not because they didn't believe in it anymore, but simply wasn't opportune. Now it is again.
And this is the frightening part of this whole scenario, is that so many people, like the president, keep saying, the Muslim faith is a peaceful religion. It is not a peaceful religion. It's a violent religion that has some people in it who don't want to be violent, but the very tenets of the Muslim faith are jihad and killing the infidels and spreading the religion by the sword. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, as long as we understand, Muslims always insist that there's no forced conversion in Islam, and there's a passage in the Quran that says that there's not to be any compulsion in religion, and that's a legitimate part of Islam. I would be the last one to say that that's not an element. But what happens in jihad is that non-Muslims are offered the choice. This is the classical understanding of jihad, which is still on the books for Muslims today. As far as Islamic law goes, this is still a part of it. It says that they are invited to accept Islam, and if they reject it, they are allowed to live as non-Muslims under Islamic rule. They can practice their religions, but with severe restrictions, and they do not enjoy equality of rights and dignity with Muslims. And this is the second, very, very decidedly second-class citizenship status that is founded on the Quran and on an elaborate superstructure of Islamic law that's been developed since then.
Well, certainly Wahhabi, or Wahhab, who founded the Wahhab religion in the 1700s, which is the basis of the Saudi religion today, didn't Wahhab actually kill fellow Muslims who would not go over to his radical form of Islam?
Yes, because the fact is that the Islamic faith has always had the idea that a renegade from the faith, that you're not free to leave Islam if you're a Muslim. A renegade from the faith has to be killed. The prophet himself said that if anybody leaves his religion, kill him. And so the Wahhabis were among the first who actually applied that to other established Islamic sects. And so they started to wage war against Muslims, whom they considered to be unbelievers and renegades from true Islam. But the fact is that they were really only expanding on an element that had been part of Islam from the beginning.
The whole situation as we see it today seems to be spreading not only from the Middle East but even into places like Indonesia and Malaysia.
Yes.
That have strong Muslim groups there, people of the Muslim faith. What are there, about 1.2 billion Muslims in the world today?
That's about right, yes.
What percentage of them do you think embrace this radical form of Islam that feels that they have justified in going around and killing people who are infidels?
Well, I'll tell you, probably only about 10% actively support the radical jihadist movements that are spread around the world today. And that's kind of comforting until you realize that it means 100 million people. But at the same time, there are other disturbing indications that it might even be higher than that. Because, for example, a recent poll was conducted in the Palestinian Authority, and 71% of the people there said that they favored suicide bomb attacks against non-combatants, against innocent civilians. And this is something that's founded in principles of Islamic law, that if you're not to target people who are not fighting, women and children and so on, but they are indeed fair game if they are considered to be aiding in the war effort. And many Islamic teachers have ruled that everyone in Israel is in that category, so that in effect there are no civilians in Israel and everyone is fair game. And that this idea would be agreed to by 71% of the Palestinians is a disturbing indication that radical Islam may be more widespread than anybody has thought up to now.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there and you have a question for Mr. Spencer, who has studied this and studied it very thoroughly, and people need to understand what we're really up against. Now, what do you think the attitude of the average, and I would call them a fundamentalist Islamist, or somebody who embraces this fundamental form of Islam, what do you think their attitude is towards America today?
Well, they consider America to be, as the Ayatollah Khomeini memorably called us, the Great Satan. And this is because if you believe that Islam is a political and social system as well as an individual faith, and that it is part of the responsibility before God for Muslims to wage war and to establish the rule of Islamic law wherever they can, then a large and powerful government that says that no, we're going to establish democracies around the world is your chief competitor, and is therefore, if you consider yourself to be the party of God, then what does that make them?
All right. So the question is, are they going to target Americans throughout the world? Or are they going to target them over there in Iraq today?
Oh, certainly, no doubt about it. There's been multiple. If you in the book Onward Muslim Soldiers, actually, I can tell you there's quite a bit, an abundance of evidence that Muslim leaders from around the world have declared the war on Iraq a jihad and declared that it's the responsibility of all Muslims around the world, anybody who can get there, to go there to fight against the Americans. And that's why you find that, as the president himself said today, that foreign jihadists are pouring into Iraq to wage war against the United States. And this is something, once again, they think that it's part of their duty before God to do.
Well, I think it's so vitally important that the average American understands this, and I don't think they do. I don't think that they want to think that anybody could really hate us, that we would be considered infidels, that we would be considered people that should be slaughtered. But I've seen the videos that are being shown to on Arabic television to children. They're actually recruiting children 5, 6, 7, 8 years old to be terrorist warriors, to actually blow themselves up, teaching them how to use weapons to kill the Americans. That's on a video we do offer here called The New Barbarians. Not The New Order of Barbarians, but The New Barbarians. And let me recommend this to you very strongly. You need to understand what we're really up against. The video, The New Barbarians, will open your eyes to a very real threat that threatens every American today. Another of our fascinating 4 tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's 4 interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. Recently, a medical journal reported on the world's first proven remedy for the common cold, Allicin, the active ingredient in garlic. During winter months, a pure Allicin garlic extract reduced the risk of the common cold by 50%. This was demonstrated in a double-blind, placebo-controlled study, science's highest measure of effectiveness. Where do you get pure Allicin? You won't find it in store-bought garlic pills, but you'll find it in Alamax. Alamax provides the equivalent of 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Where do you get Alamax? Dial this number now, 866-405-4000. Learn more about Alamax at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just want to mention for the people in the Monterey Bay area or any place that you're hearing our program that we're going to have this coming November 29th. That's 2 days after Thanksgiving, about 3.5 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. We're going to have a full-day session out at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to start at 8:30 in the morning, go until 5 in the evening. There'll be a panel discussion. We're bringing speakers in, and we're going to be talking about many of the issues we talk about here regularly on Radio Liberty. Now, there's going to be a lunch, so we have to know how many people are going to be there. So you're going to have to call for your reservations. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we hope that you'll come. You'll bring your family. You'll bring your friends. We'd love to get a great turnout because we're bringing in some great speakers. Dr. Klink is driving up from Southern California. He's going to be talking about what's happening in the Christian church today. We'll be having a talk on the USA Patriot Act, about Christian persecution, about health issues, and I'll be talking about the background of the war in Iraq and the Constitution, what's happening, what the Supreme Court is doing, and the meaning of so many of the decisions, and why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools and suddenly found a constitutional right for a woman to have abortions. You need to understand the why, not that it happened But why? And, of course, nobody's going to be telling her that. So we hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will give serious consideration to attending this conference. We did this a year ago, had a great time, great turnout. Hope we can do as well again this year. Or perhaps we can even surpass what we had last year. Well, people met other people who feel the same way as they do. We have this feeling that you're really not alone. There are other people out there who care about these ideas of freedom under God, who care about America and the wonderful freedom that we inherited from generations past, and that we hope to be able to carry forward and pass on to generations unborn. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now. Well, the Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Robert Spencer, and he is actually a member of the Free Congress Foundation, adjunct fellow, and a board member of the Christian Islamic Forum, and he's written extensively about the conflicts or the difference of the Muslim faith from the Christian faith and the very real threat that we face today. People don't like to hear about that, but what about the teaching in the mosques here in the United States? What about the teachings in the prisons here in the United States? This is really my concern, that there is a conscious effort financed in large part by the Wahhabis, the Saudi Arabians, our good friend the Saudis, to recruit people into this radical form of Islam right here in America. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely, Dr. Stan. They're pouring millions into the country, into the prison systems, into building mosques in the United States. Interesting thing is that Sergeant Hassan Akbar, the notorious sergeant in the American forces who threw a grenade at his commanding officer, killed two of his commanding officers in Kuwait last winter, and he shouted, you guys are going to come into our countries and kill our children and rape our
women.
Have
you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry about that. He went to he attended a mosque in Los Angeles that was built with an $8 million donation from King Fahd of Saudi Arabia. And it's very possible that that's where he learned the idea that his allegiance as a Muslim was more important than his allegiance as an American. And as a matter of fact, he was risking hell by fighting against the Muslim forces in Iraq, because the Quran says in chapter 4, verse 93, that if a believer kills another believer on purpose, then he's going to go straight to hell. We already saw in Britain a soldier went AWOL rather than go to fight in Iraq because he was a Muslim, and he said, I was afraid I was going to go to hell. And so this is something that's a very real motivation. And the Saudis and other radical Muslims are teaching this kind of thing to Muslims all over the world. And this makes it very difficult for non-Muslim governments, because ultimately it sets the Muslims against them.
But what about here in the United States? We have about 6 million Muslims in our own country. We have several thousand mosques. We have the prisons, you know, are filled with black people. And my understanding is that they are actually actively recruiting the blacks there, telling them that Christianity is the white man religion. You want to, of course, join the true Muslim religion, the religion of the blacks. And these people are being recruited into this violent form of Islam right here in our own country.
Yes. They tell people that, they tell the prisoners in the prisons in the United States that Christianity is the religion of racial discrimination and that Islam has never had racial discrimination. They don't tell them, of course, that Islam has a sorrier record about slavery than Christianity ever had, and that slavery is actually still legal in two Muslim countries in the world today, Sudan and Mauritania, and was only outlawed in Saudi Arabia in 1962. But they don't mention any of that kind of thing. And you have people going into the prisons, for example, like the notorious Imam Waris Din Umar, who himself is an American convert to Islam. And he told an interviewer, he actually had the poor judgment to tell an interviewer last winter that most of the Muslims in the United States secretly approve of the 9/11 attacks, even if they say that they disapprove of them. And I hope he's wrong about that, although everybody is too politically correct to make any proper investigation to see whether or not he was right. But he certainly approved of them himself and was teaching that kind of thing in the prisons, and he was by no means the only one.
Well, I think that we have a fifth column here in the United States, and the fact that people don't understand that, and I would hope that the Muslims and Christians could live together here. Unfortunately, what they have unleashed, this radical form of Islam on the world, and there are people out there who are actually promoting this. And what about the funding, the Saudi funding for this radical movement throughout the world?
Well, the Saudis, of course, have billions of dollars from the oil money, and their Wahhabi form of Islam is very aggressive, and they have been funding radical movements around the world, absolutely, and in the United States. And this is something that evidently still continues. There's all kinds of Saudi money pouring into the United States and funding even ostensibly moderate Muslim groups. And this is something that is ultimately going to have to be addressed by investigators, but it's been... any kind of investigation has been stymied by the strange fact that we're supposed to be allied with Saudi Arabia, and they don't really act like our friend, but we constantly find that there's blockings on efforts really to investigate what's going on there. I hope this is going to be changing now, but so far it's been a pretty sorry record.
Well, I hope that you're right, but I fear that there are forces in Washington, D.C. who say one thing and do another. They talk about, you're not with us, you're against us. And then, of course, they consistently protect the Saudis from efforts to expose their involvement in 9/11, their continued financing of Islamic terrorism, not only throughout the world, but right here in the United States. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Robert Spencer.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught into a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians. They still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable. But through regular sources, call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me mention several other products we carry. One of them is a Big Berkey and the Berkey Light water filters. And if there is ever a problem as far as the unavailability of water, or if you are concerned about the taste of your water, there might be things in it that weren't healthy for you. If you're spending a lot of money for bottled water, why don't you just change that and get yourself a Berkey water filter. Certainly the Big Berkey is made of stainless steel. It's got a design that's been around for 150 years. You put the water in the top. It goes to the ceramic filters that are packed with activated charcoal and goes into the lower chamber, and you just pour it out, and it'll filter about 25 gallons a day. The Big Berkey water filter costs $239.95 plus $10 of shipping. If you buy it through us, you get a 4-tape set or a video we produced. You can see pictures of this up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. The Big Berkey is available in every state but California and Iowa. So if you'd like to get something that in California, where you can get the Berkey Light is made of Lexan, which is transparent, so you can actually see the water level, and I like that better. The filters are called the Black Berkey filters, and they really do a much better job than the traditional water filters, the ceramic ones, but they have to be replaced every couple of years. So if you're going to be out in the mission field, you'd want to get the Big Berkey. If you're going to be here in California or elsewhere, or maybe you'd like to get the Berkey Light. Now, you can get special post filters that'll take the fluoride out of your water, but you have to get them separately from the water filters. The Berkey Light is $199.95. You can see it on our webpage, and we hope many of you, of course, will seriously consider ordering the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 now. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest is Mr. Robert Spencer, and of course we're talking about Onward Muslim Soldiers, How Jihad Still Threatens America and the West. Give us a call if you're out there if you'd like to talk to Mr. Spencer at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Monterey Bay area. Well, now, are there any active Muslim units here, you know, radical units here in the United States that we know of? Certainly, there appeared to have been in the past, and yet, what's so amazing to me is that we haven't had any real terrorist attacks here in the United States since September 11th. How would you explain that?
Well, I'll tell you, we're dealing with a very patient foe, and I think we would be it would be dangerous for us to think that they've been completely neutralized. Certainly, they've been very damaged by the war on terror. There's no doubt about that, but the game is not over. The fact is that in 1993, they first bombed the World Trade Center, and then it was 8 years before there was another major attack on American soil, and that was the successful bombing of the World Trade Center as well as the Pentagon. Now, this is the hijacking of the planes, and of course. Now, this is something that you know, probably if you had been listening to the radio in 1996, 1997, 1998, people would say, well, it's been 5 years since there was an attack on American soil, and so it seems like law enforcement is doing its job and things are going well. And maybe that did have something to do with it, but the foe that we're dealing with is somebody that, as I explained earlier, they see this conflict in terms of centuries. And they see themselves as continuing a conflict that began in the 7th century, so that they are not they're not going to give up easily or be unwilling to wait out a period of pressure. And certainly if the administration changes in Washington next year, then there might be a very different attitude to the war on terror, and I think that they might see that. Certainly, I think it's virtually certain that radical Muslim elements, some at least, will see that as a sign of American weakness, the way that Osama bin Laden saw the withdrawal from Somalia by President Clinton in the 90s as a sign of American weakness, and consider that that is another a renewed signal to strike.
Well, now you have a chapter in your book about the myth of Islamic tolerance.
Yes.
Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, certainly. You routinely hear people say that the Islamic world was always more tolerant than the Christian world. It was better for non-Muslims in the great Muslim empires of the Middle Ages and the period of that time than it was for non-Christians in Europe. The fact is, however, that this is a little bit overstated, and it's overstated for political reasons that have arisen in our own day. If you look at the actual historical records, which I do in the book Onward Muslim Soldiers, you find that actually non-Muslims never really had it great in Muslim societies. It's hard to say whether they had it better or worse than non-Christians in Europe, because, you know, how do you measure that kind of thing? If there's injustices on both sides, mistreatment on both sides, it's hard to say that one was better than the other. The fact is that Islamic law does not allow for the equality of rights and dignity for all people. It only allows for the equality of rights and dignity of Muslims. And non-Muslims who are living under Islamic rule, even to this day, this is part of Islamic law, they live as second-class citizens. And so the non-Muslims in the days of the great Muslim empires, they did live as second-class citizens with very many restrictive laws. They were not allowed to hold authority over Muslims, and so they were restricted to everything, restricted from everything but the most menial jobs. They were had to wear different kinds of clothes. Some places they were forbidden to wear shoes. All kinds of humiliating regulations that went along with a higher tax rate for non-Muslims. And this was the tolerance that they're talking about. They were allowed to practice their faith, but with these severe restrictions.
All right, well, let's go to Daryl, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Daryl. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan and your guest. And I just give you a real quick background here. I learned several dialects of Arabic while I was in military intelligence. I taught a class on the Middle East and Islam at the United States Army Intelligence Center and School back in the early 80s. And while I was at that school, I sponsored numerous officers from Arab countries, armed forces, probably over 20. They were all Muslims. The majority were Egyptians, but I believe I also sponsored at least one Moroccan, a Tunisian, and several Saudis. And I was also in Egypt twice on temporary duty for joint U.S.-Egyptian military exercises. And I'd just like to share with both of you a few general things that I noticed, and maybe you both can comment on them. And that is, I found many Muslims are more secular than they are Muslim, just like many Christians are more secular than they are Christian.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. And for that, we should thank God, because that means that they are not going to be taking seriously the kinds of elements of Islam that I've been discussing tonight.
Exactly. And also, the Muslim or Islamic world is divided almost as much as Christendom, where we have Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, etc. Islam, as your guest has pointed out, has different branches. The Sunnis are the majority, but you also have a sizable minority in the Shiite Muslims, which tend to be a little more radical, and you have the Wahhabi and Saudi Arabia, the Druze in parts of Lebanon and Syria who consider themselves Muslims, even though a lot of Muslims...
Yeah, the Muslims don't consider themselves.
Exactly.
Don't consider them Muslim.
All right, but I think the important thing is, Daryl, that we have a situation where we have about 100 million people who have embraced this radical form of Muslim belief. It is not a majority, but how would you like to have 100 million people who wanted to kill you and were willing to kill themselves to do it?
Well,
and that's what we're really up against.
Right, and my concern is that as we go around stomping Muslim countries such as Iraq, bombing them back into the Stone Age, is that we're alienating, the estimates are between 1 billion to 1.2 billion Muslims in the world, and that stretches all the way
all right.
into
Well, let's get Robert Spencer's reply to that. Do you think that some of the things we're doing now are antagonizing people, driving them into the arms of this radical element?
Yeah, I think that there is some truth to that. The fact is, however, though, that there's also an incredible propaganda machine that's working in the Muslim world that is absolutely misrepresenting what we're trying to do in Iraq and trying to put the worst face on it possible. And they're really stirring up a lot of anti-American hatred. I'm not saying that everything we've done there is perfect, but that the fact is that there are so many people among the radical Muslim elements that really want to see us fail there and are doing everything they can to bring that about. It is true that there are all sorts of different sects within Islam. Unfortunately, however, they all share a general agreement about the necessity for violent jihad and that as an element of the religion. And so you find that radical Islam and radical Muslims come from all sects. And so it's not something that you can isolate as being from one group or another.
Wouldn't you both agree, though, that the militant Muslims come mainly from the Shiites, not so much from the Sunnis?
No, I wouldn't agree with that, actually, because the Wahhabi movement comes from the Sunni Islam, and actually the Shafi'i school of Sunni jurisprudence, which is the oldest and most influential school of the four schools of law that Sunni Muslims almost all generally follow. And actually the Shafi'i school is also the other three schools have taken their teaching on this from the Shafi'is. They teach that it is part of the collective responsibility of the Muslims to wage war against the non-Muslim world until they either convert to Islam or submit under Islamic rule. And this is taught right out of Al-Azhar University in Cairo, which is the oldest and most respected university in the Muslim world. And so that's a Sunni monument there, and a venerable school of thought. It's certainly shared by the Shiites, but unfortunately we can't restrict this problem to the Shiites.
Well,
right, I understand.
Thank you very much, Daryl. We're going to let you go, and right now I want to talk a little bit about Abdullah Azzam, because this is a very key figure in everything that's going on today. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Well, he's the intellectual godfather of Osama bin Laden, and it's very interesting because he actually was in the United States. And he came here freely. He spoke to Islamic groups in the Midwest. He counseled violent jihad and sedition. And he was able to move about unmolested in the country and uninvestigated. And he returned to the Middle East. He ultimately went to Afghanistan to fight jihad there. Some people think that Osama himself killed him after a dispute. But Whether or not that's true, it's certainly true that Osama got his idea of what it meant to wage jihad from Abdullah Azzam, and that Azzam's teachings are revered around the world by radical Muslims today. In the book, I tell a story of how one of his books was actually found in a house in, I believe it was Detroit, in the library of a group of Muslims that were plotting to join up with the Taliban and with Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. They actually found books by Abdullah Azzam with endorsements from Osama bin Laden on the back cover. The publisher evidently thought that Osama's word was going to carry a lot of weight with his audience. And so he put these endorsements on the cover. These books are really appalling, and I quote from them liberally in my own book to try to illustrate what is the mindset of radical Muslims today, and really the contempt that they have for non-Muslims and the violent intentions that they have in general is, I think, quite eye-opening.
Well, one of the things that disturbs me is that when Azzam was here, he was obviously being monitored by somebody from our government, because there are all sorts of videos of him traveling around America calling for blood flowing in the streets of the United States. And when Stephen Emerson put that into a video, it is called Jihad in America, I'm sure you've seen that.
Oh, yes.
In 1994, somebody with a great deal of power prevented that video from being shown across America, which would have demonstrated to our citizens the very real threat we faced back in 1994. It was almost as if somebody in our government didn't want the American people to know the truth.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Have you seen that film? I'm sure you have.
Oh, yes, I have. It's an excellent film. I recommend that everybody that is listening, if you haven't seen it, I couldn't recommend it more highly. Stephen Emerson is an outstanding investigator of jihad movements, and I am honored to say that he gave the my book, Onward Muslim Soldiers, a very strong endorsement. Coming from him, really, that's about the highest praise that one can get, because Steve Emerson, for years, under immense pressure from both from Muslims and from Americans, has been investigating radical Islam in the United States. And I call on everyone to get his video, Jihad in America. It is available online at various online bookstores. And you'll see yourself what American Muslims are saying in the mosques. And there's no indication that since it was made that they've stopped speaking this way. Quite the contrary, as a matter of fact.
And we actually carry a book by Stephen Emerson called American Jihad, which of course goes into great detail about these same things and about Azzam. Azzam is a key figure, mainly because he was allowed to come across America, and somebody, and I don't know who, do you have any idea who it was that suppressed that video that would not allow it to be shown until after 9/11?
I'm a little unclear on exactly who it was. I know that PBS would have nothing to do with Emerson after that, and that he had been working with them regularly, but they were influenced by claims that the American Muslim advocacy groups routinely resort to, that anybody who dares to criticize radical Islam is immediately branded as a racist and a bigot, and PBS immediately caved into that kind of talk, and you haven't seen Emerson on there anymore. And that in itself is shameful, really. But, yes, you're right, it was worse, but unfortunately I can't give the details on that.
Now you talk about the great jihad cover-up.
Yes.
You want to get into that a little bit?
Yes, certainly. You go online and go to the Council on American Islamic Relations or the American Muslim Council, any one of them, and you will find that the explanation that they give for jihad is speaking about that it's a spiritual struggle, that it's at the most a struggle with the force of arms, but only for self-defense, for justice, and so on. You find none of them will admit to the elements of Islamic doctrine that I've been discussing today, although I get them straight from the manuals of Islamic law that are published by Muslims for Muslims. And there's no doubt that these elements do exist and that they are acted upon by radicals, but you'll never get that idea from American academics or from American Muslim advocacy groups. And the problem is that that leaves us dangerously unprepared. I was speaking with a translator at Guantanamo not long ago, and he said that he was asked by the interrogators there to make a list of verses of the Quran that had to do with jihad. But then his Muslim superior actually forbade him to make this list.
This was a man in the United States Army?
Yes, indeed.
And he was forbidden to do that by his Muslim superior?
That is correct. And so the interrogators didn't get their list. They were not able to be informed about what verses of the Quran radical Muslims use and how they use them. And so they were at a disadvantage when they were interrogating these people. And this is political correctness run amok.
But, of course, what you're suggesting is that a Muslim army officer has more loyalty to the Muslim faith than to the United States of America.
Certainly in that instance, that seems to be the case.
Well, I think this is something we really, when we begin bringing other cultures in here, especially with a totally foreign religion, you were simply laying or planting the seeds for dissension and real problems in America. And it really all started back in 1965 when they changed the immigration laws, and I don't think they were stupid. I think they knew exactly what they were doing. Well, what's happening over in Europe as far as a radical Muslim movement?
Well, Europe, the Muslim populations are growing much faster than they are in the United States. And so while you have millions of peaceful Muslims in Europe, just as you have in the United States, and while you have many secular Muslims, as our caller pointed out, at the same time, in Europe, there have been much more strident and open calls than we have seen here for Islamic law to be instituted. There was even an article published in a Paris magazine that called for stoning for adultery, and this is just one indication.
You mean installing Sharia law in Europe, in
yes.
the countries of Europe?
Yeah, and there are open calls for that now, and the Muslim populations are growing so quickly there, Dr. Stan, that this is something we could actually see by mid-century.
And I think that the people don't really understand that the Caucasians there, traditional French and Germans and Italy, Italians aren't having children, and the Muslims are having four or five or six children, and they intend, and this is being done very intentionally, isn't it, to take over the country simply by reproduction rather than revolution?
Well, there's no doubt that if demographic trends continue, then there will be majorities in several Western European countries, majorities of Muslims by mid-century. And if that's the case, then there are many Muslims that believe that once there's a Muslim majority in a country, then the Muslims must rule by Islamic law. And so you're going to see increasing calls for that.
Well, I think the world is in a terrible, terrible strait, and mainly because they don't understand what's happening and they haven't read your book. How can people get copies of Onward, Muslim Soldiers?
Well, they can go to any good bookstore should have it, Barnes & Noble, Borders. If your local bookstore doesn't have it, ask them to order it, or you can go online to the Amazon.com or to BarnesandNoble.com. Also visit my website, JihadWatch.com. We're starting a new organization, Jihad Watch, to track jihadist movements around the world, and you might find some interesting things there. You can also order the book there.
Well, I hope maybe we can get you onto one of our other programs and get this information out and perhaps even talk about Jihad Watch.
Well, thank you very much. I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Okay, our guest has been Mr. Robert Spencer from the Free Congress Foundation. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I want to mention that if you want to get that tape, Geopolitics, you can get it by itself, or it is included in the four-tape set, The Secret Government. And there you'll actually hear an interview with Professor Quigley. You'll hear my interview with Norman Dodd, who is Director of Research for the Reese Committee, investigated the great tax-exempt foundations, and he tells the story of how his investigator went to the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and found out that they were planning for the First World War back in 1908. and they were intensely figuring out how they were going to get the war going and how to involve America in the war. That's the Secret Government 4-tape set. Let me recommend it to you. So many other tape sets. You can get it part of the Secret Government Special that has the Secret Government 4-tape set, the Secret Society's 4-tape set, the video, the Secrets of the Illuminati, and so much more. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and order those. And then let me mention that we do offer Miracle 2 soap products and Miracle 2 soap. Well, we can't say anything that it's excellent soap, but some of our listeners give us the most amazing stories of what this has been able to accomplish for them and how it's helped their rashes or their acne or their stomach problems. And all we can do is suggest you try the neutralizer or try the gel or try the soap. We've used the products for several years now. We're sold on them. We wouldn't be without them. And we hope that you'll feel the same way. There's a soap, a moisturizing soap, a lotion, a gel, and a neutralizing solution, and you can get them at a special price. You can learn more about them up on our website at RadioLiberty.com, or you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask about Miracle 2 soap products. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family and help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day on about 60 outlets every week, trying to get people to understand what's really going on, and that behind all of these things that are happening, there are spiritual forces, and there is a spiritual force behind the Muslim religion, a dark spiritual force that advocates killing and violence, and fortunately, most Muslims may not embrace that, but there are a group that do, and they are the ones who believe in the strict interpretation of the Muslim scriptures, Hadith and the Quran. So you need to know this, what we're up against, and you need to help us get the information out. And one thing you could do would be to join the Radio Liberty family, and for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us as we reach out across America, across the world with the truth. So give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR if you'd like to know more about joining the Radio Liberty family. And then if you'd like to get a free newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. Just call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We remember about the conference we're going to have on the 29th of November here in the Monterey Bay area at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. An all-day seminar should be a great time. If there's any way you can get here, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we're only going to be able to take people with invitation who are signed up ahead of time, because we're going to be serving lunch and we have to know how many people are going to be there. Again, the number 1-800-5-448-927. We hope many of you will go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, where you can pull down our programs, and we have our internet back up running, so you can listen to it live on the internet, the programs, 5 hours a day. You can, of course, listen to our archive programs. You can take down our newsletter, and we give you our permission to copy those or anything else off of the internet, and then get other people to listening as well. Tell your friends about RadioLiberty.com. Tell them about our shortwave programs, or our satellite programs, or our internet programs, or our radio programs, and encourage them to listen. You could be the best thing you ever did for them, because if they really understand what we're up against, it could be a life-changing experience for them, especially when they understand the spiritual aspect of what we're really up against. So remember again that the website is RadioLiberty.com. We hope that many of you will seriously consider getting our book, Brotherhood of Darkness. It's $12.95, or you can get the Brotherhood of Darkness special with the book, the video, and the audio tape for $29.95. This is a great time for beginning to think about Christmas presents. If you get one of our catalogs, we have some great books. Let me suggest a very important book by Russell Blaylock, that goes into health secrets that can save your life. A wonderful gift for yourself, for your friends. That's Russell Blaylock's book, Health Secrets, that can save your life. And Professor Blaylock will be with us a couple of times this coming week. Great information that you need to know for a healthy life. And then, of course, this is the time when we want to remind you that if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival in America, because if the American people do not return to God, if we do not return to the faith of our founding fathers, then the America we've known will be lost forever and simply become another notation in the history books. America can be saved, but only if there are enough Americans out there who believe in a society, who believe in a free society, and are willing to help us spread the word about what our Constitution says and the most carefully kept secret that America was a Christian nation. Lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, we'll be back again. This is Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. Thank you.